Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Once Upon a Nightmare. I am your host Lorraine and I'm here to discuss the horrors of the world, be it fictional or real. This week, unfortunately, we are going real. For True Crime Tuesday, I'm going to discuss something that one doesn't quite expect from a person of a certain age or from very young siblings. I'm going to delve into kids who kill as I look into the Bever family massacre at the hands of their own flesh and blood. This is the true story of the Bever brothers. Sources, you can look at my show notes. And just a little heads up, this is quite a brutal case and it does involve the death of children. And I'd also like to give a little shout out to The Shit Show, a half-assed true crime podcast at The Shit Show CP on Twitter. They gave me a little hand with some questions that I had about certain laws in America. On July 22nd, 2015, brothers Michael, 16, and Robert Bever, 18, brutally murdered 5 members of their family, attempted to murder one more, and luckily, due to a lack of time, were not able to get to the youngest family member. Michael and Robert were the sons of 52-year-old David and 44-year-old April. They also had 5 siblings, 13-year-old Crystal, 12-year-old Daniel, 7-year-old Christopher, 5-year-old Victoria, although in the video of Michael's interview he says she's 4, and 2-year-old Autumn. The Bevers lived in a large home in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, southeast of Tulsa, with a population of about 100,000 people. The family were not well known in the neighborhood, some going as far as to say that they never even knew their names of the entire family until the actual murders. One neighbor describes them as a perfectly quiet family. The town in which they lived was filled with families and churches on every corner and just seemed to be like a very quiet, safe place to raise a family. The father, David, worked in computers, working outside of the home as well as having a home office. The mother, April, she stayed home to actually homeschool her children. Robert and Michael were very close. They shared a room and were described by their sister as always talking together and very secretive. They shared everything together and Michael was known to really look up to his older brother, Robert. After all, they were all each other had in the form of a peer relationship. It is always a strange concept to look at children as nothing but pure innocence. Cases dated back as far as Mary Bell and more in my time, the murder of Jamie Bulger, does bring nothing but shock, as does a case like this. How can children kill? What is it that draws them to this? Is it an awful upbringing, mean parents, computer games, movies, TVs, or are they just simply pure evil? It's hard to think of people as being born evil, as most of the time I believe people are the way they are because of their life, but there are times when there is nothing to suggest they should have turned out the way they did. So why did these two boys murder and attempt to murder their entire family? The concept of murder is hard enough to comprehend for most people, but even more so when the person who has committed the murder is a family member, and a family member so young. There is something so disturbing about the idea that someone could kill their own flesh and blood. The more and more I looked into this case, the more and more cases I actually fell upon about siblings who killed members of their family. It's definitely a discussion for nature versus nurture. What drives one child to act that way, or two in this case, and not others? Were the children treated differently? Did their living conditions add to it? Was it the fact that these two boys were older and maybe as the others grew up, there would have been crying from them? Or are some simply born that way? I personally, 99.9% of the time, don't believe people are born that way, but like everything, there are exceptions. The Bever children were kept from socializing with others, even going so far as to keep them from school. As mentioned, the children were homeschooled by their mother, April. It was said by the brothers that David was very abusive towards all the children, both physically and mentally. And while this may or may not have been the case, it doesn't explain why they murdered their siblings. You can understand why they go for the parents, not that I'm condoning it, but why did they murder their siblings and then plan to dismember them along with their parents? Both Robert and Michael had a very unhealthy obsession with true crime, and also a film Robert found himself wanting to live by was the 2009 film Rampage. It shows a man in full body armour on a mission to cleanse the world of people who did not contribute to society. While they may have been homeschooled to protect them from the outside world, this did not protect them from the influence of the internet. There was computers in the house, and Michael and Robert did have their own laptop. The parents believed keeping them in the house, keeping them from the outside world, was protecting them. And this may have protected them from the outside world, but due to technology, the outside world is now available within the home. This was not monitored at all. The children pretty much had a free rein of what they could watch and look at on the internet. The issue with this type of lifestyle is you do not have any real contact with the real world. Your world is what people choose to put online. It is a skewed version of the world. Usually, while not always necessarily good, our view of the world is guided solely by not what we see on the internet. We speak to friends, we encounter different individuals on a daily basis. We have some sort of understanding of how life is from what we see. With the internet and of course the media, it can be hard to determine what is real and what is not. And as I mentioned, the boys did have this obsession with true crime. And as we've seen, there are cases where serial killers are turned into some sort of rock star. Charles Manson, for example, he wanted to become a famous musician. And when he was, you know, arrested and committed, done for these murders, he became an icon in his own right. His face was on T-shirts. He even made it to the cover of Rolling Stone, a magazine that had icons like Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, John Lennon, etc. So it's something that can be glorified because, let's face it, everyone knows who Charles Manson is and people do idolise him. The brothers, they wanted to become famous for their crimes. They spoke of the mass murders at the 1999 massacre of Columbine High School, but they wanted to get higher numbers. And again, their views of these shooters was from the internet. It wasn't from speaking to other people. Also, they looked at the Aurora shooting. They wanted that kind of notoriety, if not more. Michael's sister, who survived the attack, spoke of her brother's obsession with serial killers. She said Michael would mention serial killers at least once a day, and also spoke about how he said he could really hurt someone. She, of course, didn't think he was serious. And in the documentary on Sky Crime, Killer Siblings, and also listening to Michael, it would appear that actually both brothers were obsessed with serial killers and mass shootings, and they simply wanted to be famous. Now, to do this, they would obviously need certain tools. They would need knives, they would need guns, and of course, they wanted the full body armor like their hero in the film Rampage. Robert did have a job, so he was outside of the house sometimes and was able to purchase these items with the money he earned. Being from the UK, we don't really get the whole gun thing, but I saw that in the state of Oklahoma, a person can own a weapon without a license, a permit, and doesn't even have to register it. And when he was 18 years old, he realised that he could actually do this. The owner of the gun shop said he is shocked on hearing the plan of what the Bever brothers were actually going to do with the guns they were going to purchase from him. But apparently, all it took to get this gun, and I quote, was the gun shop owner said, "Bever seemed like a real nice guy over the phone, real polite and soft-spoken." Well, he's hardly going to say, "Can I get some guns to commit mass murder?" Now, I understand this guy in the shop didn't do anything wrong, and the store owner does wonder what would have happened if the guys had got the guns. Well, I think we know the answer to that, but thanks to a 12-year-old murdered brother Daniel and a wounded sister, they never actually got to act out this fantasy. The boys intended on getting handguns and checked a box to say he was 21, as in the state of Oklahoma, you have to be 21 though to own a handgun, but apparently it's only 18 to own a shotgun. And the owner of the gun shop, he did say that had Robert turned up, he would have turned him away when it came to the handgun, but he would have got the shotgun. So what was the plan for these two brothers after they had got these guns? There was a journal. Robert had made a journal where he would document all he wanted to do, and he wanted to kill over 500 people, and explains his plan to his brother Michael. And Michael is equally as excited to act out this plan. They just both wanted to kill a bunch of people. They wanted to get the high numbers. The issue with this type of life that they led, sheltered away from the world, there was no real warning signs. There was no peers to see them being weird. Their sister Crystal, on the other hand, at only 13, she did find their whole behaviour extremely odd and was not at all comfortable with their newfound hobby of collecting dangerous weapons. She even voiced her concerns to her parents, and her parents really didn't take much notice, and they didn't share her concerns, and they kind of took that attitude as in, boys will be boys. But unfortunately, that attitude, through no fault of their own, led to the demise of the whole family. Now, I'm just going to let you know now, I am going to talk about the actual murders, so if you want to skip ahead because it is quite brutal, then that's fine. The murder started with 13-year-old sister Crystal. Michael asked Crystal to come to the bedroom as he wanted to show her something on his computer. She obviously went willingly, and when she did, Robert came up behind her and slit her throat. This, fortunately, did not kill Crystal, and she did manage to fight back. Robert continued the attack by stabbing her in her arms and her abdomen. The mother, April, she did hear all this commotion from downstairs and ran up to find her daughter being attacked. Robert then turned on his mother and he began to rain down his knife on her over and over again until she lay dead. Crystal, though, managed to crawl away as she tried to go and protect her younger siblings. The brothers then moved from room to room. Their father, David, was stabbed 28 times. Michael even went as far to say that Robert used the biggest knife he had to murder his father. They stabbed their 7-year-old brother, Christopher, 6 times. And Michael discusses that when this was happening, all he was doing was screaming. And then they stabbed their younger sister, Victoria. She was stabbed 18 times. The other brother managed to seek refuge, locking himself in a room and even managing to call the police. This was Daniel. And the saddest thing about this particular murder was his belief in his brother's cry for help. Michael managed to convince Daniel that Robert was the one doing all these killings. He was the lone killer. Daniel, believing his brother, Michael, he opened the door to let him in, but unfortunately waiting for him on the other side was both Michael and Robert, and they pushed their way in and proceeded to stab young Daniel 9 times, killing him. Crystal has managed to crawl to the outside of the house, but unfortunately Robert sees her and drags her back in. She was so badly hurt she was unable to fight him off as he began to now suffocate her. Crystal lay dead, and this saved her life as she waited for the police to come and help her. After Crystal, the boys planned to cut the head off a 2-year-old Autumn, but luckily they failed to do this as the police began banging on the door. They realised they were out of time and both brothers fled. The police only showed up because of the 12-year-old Daniel, who had bravely managed to call the police to alert them to the house before he himself is brutally murdered. The call he makes is truly heartbreaking, and it is available online, but it is hard to listen to. His bravery gave his sister Crystal, who was severely injured, the time she needed to survive. Luckily, the police arrived and found her before her brothers could carry out the dismemberment that they had planned. 2 officers responded to what they thought was a call of domestic violence with a stabbing. On arrival, they saw that there was so much blood that they soon realised that the situation was a lot more dire than they had first thought. When they approached the door, they heard a faint cry of a person asking for help. The police kicked the door down and found the teenage girl lying on the floor. The officers could tell she was in a bad way, as when she spoke, they could hear the blood in her throat, but she was able to tell them that she was stabbed by her 2 older brothers. This scene gave extreme cause for concern, and more officers did arrive at the scene. After they had taken Crystal to safety, the officers then proceeded to go back into the house, room to room, finding body after body. They found April and Daniel first, followed by their father. Behind a bathroom door, they find Christopher and Victoria with multiple stab wounds. The police then continue throughout the house and they find another survivor. And this is 2-year-old Autumn. She was unharmed. Autumn, who was actually about to turn two around that time, was sleeping quietly in her crib, unaware of everything that had gone on, as her birthday cake sat in the fridge. The police are for the moment overjoyed that they have found an unharmed survivor. As they continue to look, they bring in the police dogs. They leave through an open door and into the woods out the back of the house. It is still very dark, and at this stage, as they search, they begin to find discarded armour on the ground. Luckily, the dog picks up the scent, but due to what they have witnessed, they do not know what they were walking into. Within minutes, the dogs discover both suspects. Robert quickly complies, but Michael does not. This soon changes, though, once the police release the dogs onto Michael. The demeanour of the two boys was not one of sorrow, not one of regret. The police officers almost found them to be a bit cocky, with one brother saying, "It wasn't like it was on the TV, one cut and they die." This was also a comment that was made by serial killer Ed Kemper. When he used a knife on his victims, he never thought it would take so much effort. As the police take the boys to the police car, a police officer recalls hearing Robert say to Michael, "It's been a pleasure. I'm proud of what I've done." The appearance of both boys at this stage, they are extremely dishevelled, and as you can imagine, they are covered in blood and mud from going through the woods and hiding. Michael in his picture does look a little bit alarmed by what is going on, but Robert, he has a different look in his eye. There is a slight grin to him, and he doesn't look scared or shocked as what has happened. He looks almost proud by what he's done. When both Robert and Michael were taken to the police station, you don't really see interviews of Robert. They are all on Michael. Michael begins to explain to the officers how the whole idea came up about 2 months ago. 2 months before, after realizing Robert could now legally buy a gun without a permit in Oklahoma. Certain items, as in ammunition, was to be shipped to the house, but realizing that on delivery, their parents could find out about what they had purchased, they decided to act out their terrible crime before it all arrived. A huge batch of ammunition would obviously raise a lot of questions. Robert and Michael had planned to murder their entire family so that they could wait for all the items to be delivered to the house, and then they would take a car to drive out of state to begin their murderous rampage. The police during the interview with Michael are so good at keeping their cool, even when they discuss the stabbing of their younger siblings. There is a part in the interview where the police officer is waiting for an explanation as to why this happened. As mentioned, we heard the children were physically and mentally abused, but Michael doesn't bring this up. He simply says they needed to get them out of the way. The police officer's face, it says it all. He's struggling with this, but he does keep his cool, and fair play to him. Michael is asked, "Did you have a goal?" And Michael simply replies, "To become famous, to set the record." While Michael did what most people do when more than one is involved, he kind of started to backtrack a bit. "It wasn't me. I didn't kill anyone. It was Robert." Robert, on the other hand, in his interviews, according to documents, he couldn't keep his mouth shut. Robert loved it all. All he wanted to do was tell his story, what he had done, take all the credit, how he had masterminded the whole plan. He wanted to go down as a famous serial killer. I'm not sure why he, as the elder brother and as an adult at that stage, his interview tapes are sealed. They're not to be seen by the public, and I couldn't find out why. If anyone knows, please do let me know. Both brothers were found guilty. Many reports state that the jurors really struggled with the facts of the case due to such graphic content. There were tears from some. Robert pleaded guilty and is serving life without parole. Michael, on the other hand, got life with the possibility of parole for the murders and 28 years for other charges of assault and battery. While Michael does stand a chance of maybe one day being released, there was a journal found in his cell with an excerpt that read, "Once upon a time, there were two brothers named Robert and Michael. They hated their family, so they killed them. The end." There was also a drawing of a swastika with the words "White Power" underneath it. When in court, Robert discussed his mental disorders that he'd been diagnosed with: major depressive disorder with psychotic features, PTSD, and it's said that some doctors believed he had borderline personality disorder, autism, and schizophrenia. Robert is now on medication. Robert went on to say that they were never properly homeschooled. Robert had experienced school, but only preschool, where he was swiftly removed due to being molested. Robert spoke of how they were never enough for their parents and were in fact self-educated. He spoke of his father being being mad at Michael as he had a speech impediment and was told that he could only speak to Michael when he spoke properly. They were fed, but it was very basic food, and they were estranged from other family members, such as grandparents and aunts and uncles, and his parents were very paranoid. Both brothers did break down in tears when they were on the stand. On viewing pictures, Robert cried, "That's a lot of blood. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking." Michael didn't make eye contact with Robert during most of the testimony. As Robert broke down, Michael and several jurors also wept. He went on to say that after a fight with his parents in 2013, he wanted to kill them, and that his father was physically abusive and his parents would shut themselves away in their offices and no one would leave the house for months. The boys say life at home was bad, yet the sister, she's got a different story. She says that when they were on the stand, that didn't happen within the house. There was confusion over who actually committed the murders, with Robert saying it was all him, but Michael has said he did commit murder too. Where the house stood, there is now a park with trees and benches and greenery. On March 18th, 2017, the house was destroyed by a fire. A next door neighbour saw two vehicles draw up to the house around 1:30 a.m. and when they left, she saw smoke. The fire department got a call around 3:30 a.m. and it took them about an hour to get this fire under control. On March 27th, 2019, Reflection Park was the official site dedicated to the lives of the people that were murdered within the safety of their own home by the two children they loved. The idea of the garden was planned before the fire. It was going to be torn down for this actual park to take place. This case is one that makes you wonder how these kids would have turned out had they been allowed to experience the world through the outside rather than what was shown to them on the internet, or the stories of how they lived. Were they true? Would they have had friends that had a positive impact? Would they have had relationships where they were not so reliant on each other? And I by no means blame the parents for homeschooling them. You know, this does happen in some families. But in the world we are currently in, the outside is a scary place. But did the parents actually educate them, or were they neglected, as Robert suggested? In a case like this, no one wins. Two girls are without parents and their siblings. Two boys are in prison. Three children and two adults lost their lives in a truly, truly brutal way. And this is just a truly tragic story of the Bever family. And on that note, I'm going to leave you with something a little nicer. And that is my podcast recommendation. I am going for something that I personally have listened to quite a few of them myself, and I really enjoy it. And that is the podcast, The Student Verdict. And I tell you now, go follow her on all the social medias and have a listen to her promo, and then go listen to her episodes and give her an amazing review.
Hi, everyone. It's Emily from The Student's Verdict podcast. We're a new bi-weekly podcast covering true crime cases, some you might not have heard of. So far, we've covered cases such as The Monster of Worcester and the disappearance of Marlene Oakes. The Student's Verdict is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. Also, find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And remember to keep living the dream.
And I'd like to say myself, thank you for listening to my episode for True Crime Tuesday. And don't forget to rate and review on iTunes. You can find me on Instagram as Once Upon a Nightmare Podcast. You can find me on Twitter as A Nightmare Pod. I'm on Facebook now, actually. I did join it. I think it's Once Upon a Nightmare. And Letterboxd as A Nightmare Pod. You can also email me if you are old school at onceuponanightmarepod@gmail.com. And thank you for listening, and I will chat to you again next week with a movie.